My name is Henning Henningsen. I'm one of the other Chipmunk owners, and my airplane, if we were doing this live, you would see, is in the first prototypes of Canadian markings.
Okay.
And it had a number of samples when it was built. They were modeled not only in England, but the prototypes had various things that came later, if you will. And as Richard said, there's a few key things to understand about the Chipmunk. One of them is that, first of all, its propeller does turn
the other way.
So it's left rudder, left rudder, left rudder. But then, as Richard also described, there's a handbrake.
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't have toe brakes, and you can get a little push and a little stop on each side, but you will at some point reach for that left brake.
Yeah.
And it's very subtle, but very necessary.
Understood.
And when you looked at some of these, you might realize that the Canadian chippies all did start with greenhouse type canopies. Mm-hmm. And it described with Richard, it's a little farther forward.
Yeah, let people know what the other canopy was, a bubble.
Right, okay. And the bubbles came in much later.
Okay.
So what happened was, out of the entire production for chippies on the Canadian side, only 47% of those actually had the bubble canopy.
Hmm.
And I believe later, once they were came into the civilian hands, more people put the bubble canopies on because it's become a little more prepared.
Yeah.
In the big picture production of, you know, close to 1,500 chippies, only about 17-18% had bubble canopies out of that total production number.
Wow.
But there's some other nuances. So, for example, in the original Canadian ones in the back seat, they were just straight panels.
Mm-hmm.
The instructor in back typically couldn't see around very well, so they came to these little bit of blown out
yep.
type panels. So on approach, and you could tuck your head down and look
yeah.
to see how things were lining up.
Yep.
You might notice some spin strakes on the back. My particular airplane does not have those. Those came a little later.
They're just forward of the rudder, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
And the beauty of those was that there was had been an accident, and somebody very behind the Royals had
spun it passed,
airplane. Yeah. Spun it in, and they when they came down to it, they said, we have to blame it on something, and they put in the spin stakes on number T-341, I believe.
Somewhere
anyway,
around that.
And it was a modification that went into every particular mod. Later on, it proved that, arguably among some people, that they absolutely did nothing for safety.
Speaking of which, though, how about rudder-wise? You know, when you go to the Super Chipmunks, we'll get there later,
mm-hmm.
you know, hey, that was one of the first things they did, wasn't it? Put a big rudder on the thing.
That was one of the nicest things compared to some of the World War II planes and trainers that lost rudder effectiveness on landing, and you absolutely have to keep being going straight,
yep.
like the Stearman's or PT-26 Cornell's.
Yep.
The Chippy has a beautiful big rudder on it, and they made it even bigger. After about the first, about 1948 or so came the mod.
Okay.
And believe me, it's such a blessing. It's very, very, very light on the controls.
Mm-hmm.
And it absolutely can save you when you need a little extra edge.
Understand. Well, thank you.
You.
Yeah, no, good explanations. And now we've got the senior mentor here of our group.
Yes, we do.
And I'll let Richard introduce this gentleman to us. And he is a man who trained on these things. A former member of the Royal Canadian Air Force. Ended up flying F-86s, as I remember.
That's
but
right.
I'll let Richard do the honors.
Harry and I met when I first brought my chippy here in 2010.
And this is Harry?
This is Harry Schoening.
Okay.
Right here.
Okay.
And he's a very forthright guy. He doesn't mess around with his opinions, and he'll tell you what he thinks. In fact, I was messing around, hesitating getting my engine fixed, and Harry called me one day and said, I've just spoken to this guy, this is his number, call him now, and I did. Now, I'll follow Harry anywhere, and in fact, I have. We've got a nice picture somewhere of us in a three ship going past the Grand Teton at 13,500 feet. I naively just kept on following him.
Yeah, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so he's a very knowledgeable character about chipmunks. He's usually got two or three in his ownership. Here we are, look at that picture there. So Harry, why don't you tell us something about your training? Oh, there's one thing I have to add. I've seen Harry being interviewed sitting in his aircraft, 18048, and he starts to tear up when he talks about his training days. So
he did.
He did. He did, Harry. Yeah.
Harry, come on,
admit it. Tell us about it.
I understand that. I can get there.
Why wouldn't he?
Well, excuse me. I got my frogs this morning with all that water.
Yeah, I understand.
I joined the Canadian Air Force in 1956, right out of high school, and through all of our selection and whatnot, 30 of us got assigned to the to flying, to be pilots. And after many, many, many months of ground school and whatnot, we got to go and fly. So in December of 1956, my first trip was in an airplane, 18056, which Matt Jolly Warbird radios down the road here, which he has. And there was 25 hours of flying in a chipmunk, and the idea was to see if you could fly, because initially the Canadian Air Force took you right into the Harvard, the AT-6.
Yeah.
Right out of the field, you'd be taken off the farm and into an AT-6, which was a challenge.
Absolutely.
And I was in the, second or third class for the chipmunk. And we even had guys didn't make the chipmunk flying. And as you said, there is no easier aircraft to fly. And from there, I went on to the Harvard for 7-8 months, 200 hours, and the T-33 for 90 hours, and then the F-86 for, I don't remember how many hours the school was. And then I was based in France for 3 years and about 600 hours.
And one wife.
How about, when you went through your training in the chipmunk, was it an all-encompassing? You said you got about 25 hours in it.
Yeah.
And did they do everything in that 25? Did you do aerobatics? I mean, takeoffs and landings, obviously. You do aerobatics, you do spins. Did you do everything then?
Well, in the initial part of your flying training, stalls, spins, obviously.
Yep.
Because when you got around 12 hours, 10 to 12 hours, you were expected to go solo. And if you didn't make it by 15, you had to go back to the farm. So basically, it was just how to fly the airplane, how to hold on.
Okay.
And spins, stalls.
So you did all that.
Takeoff and landings.
Yep.
And try not to get in trouble.
Yeah, I understand. And after the fact, did you come back? Are you a chipmunk owner? Did you own several for many, many years?
When I finished F-86 school in Chatham, New Brunswick, I had a month off before I went to Europe. And on my way home, I stopped in Centralia, which is just north of London, Ontario, where the chipmunk school is. And I got a room in the officer's quarters and went over to the officer's mess and found an instructor. And I said, I want to go flying in a chipmunk. And he said, you're crazy. Here you are flying an F-86 and you want to fly a chipmunk. I said, it's the nicest airplane in the world. So anyhow, he took me up and we had a nice time. And it was many, many, many years later before I got a chipmunk. I had to build a lot of tiger moths. And a little French problem there. My wife wasn't keen on some of these things. Anyhow, in Oshkosh, many, many years ago, Bill Rose, who had a big meat packing plant, had a little compound here on, right under the T-33, where he had a little camp, and he had four chipmunks, a seaplane, Harvard, you know, a lot of airplanes. And I came out in my Tiger Moth one year, was my first Tiger Moth, because my two roommates from Pan Am were members of the group.
Okay.
And flew around with my Tiger Moth, with everybody doing their thing. And I said to Bill one day, boy, when you get ready to get rid of one of those, because I flew both of those into service, and he was rebuilding 056. Mm-hmm. And then one day, some years later, I got a telephone call. I missed that year.
Okay.
And I got a telephone call, and they were having some kind of a party. And Bill Rose said he would sell me an airplane. So I never even asked how much he wanted. I said, I'll take it. And so they eventually all got sold off to a friend of mine down in Georgia, who had basically all of them, all four.
Mm-hmm.
And they went to different people. The chap that I flew out with here, Navy pilot, he has 18049 and I have 18048,
mm-hmm.
both of which I flew in the Air Force.
Wow.
So I've had a long career.
Wow.
With
wow. Great way to start, too, it sounds like.
Oh, you know, couldn't have been better.
Yep.
Couldn't have been better.